FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's November 8th, 2017. Hard to believe. Year's almost gone. You know, I think I shared with you that I was in New Orleans about a week and a half ago for the New Orleans Investment Conference. Oh, before I get into that, join the show. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. We love to hear from you. Your voice really does count in the show. The Twitter feed's @KerryLutz. Anyway, getting back to it, I was in New Orleans at the investment conference. I didn't go to a lot of the speeches there. You know, after a while, they just kind of run together. But one that I did catch was by this gentleman who you're about to hear from, a famous investor, famous newsletter writer, and also now a novelist. I'm talking with Doug Casey, and your latest books, The Speculator and The Drug Lord. And you asked a question, Doug, at the conference, or I should say maybe you answered the question of whether or not Western civilization is worth saving and whether it has a future, whether it can survive. And there aren't many things at these conferences that I take away than I think about for long periods of time. But that is something that I've been thinking about ever since I heard you say it. So Doug, first, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Kerry. It's a pleasure. I'm speaking to you, as you know, from Cafayate, Argentina, in the high in the Andes.
and it's like you're right next door. It's amazing. It's actually better than if we picked up a regular landline and talked to each other, because we're on Skype, and the clarity of the connection every now and then, you know, Skype just nails it. And this is one of those times.
Yep.
So question, is Western civilization worth saving? Can it be saved? Has it so demeaned and denuded itself that it no longer has a future in the world?
Well, Western civilization is going downhill. I think the peak of our civilization was probably reached in about 1913, before the First World War started. And of course, war is the health of the state, and war brings out the very worst in men. Then things got worse with the reactions of governments to the Great Depression in the 30s, which was caused by governments to start with. We had World War II, but all of these things have been dragging down the great tradition of Western civilization. Why is Western civilization unique? I don't believe in multiculturalism, incidentally, because of all the cultures in the world, none of them are worth the powder that it takes to blow them to hell, with the exception of Western civilization. Ayn Rand once said, East minus West equals zero. I think she went a little bit too far, because there are good things that come from the Orient, which it's improper to say. You're not supposed to say the Orient anymore for some reason.
You're supposed to say Asia.
Yes, right. Exactly. This is all part of the politically correct movement, where you cannot use certain words. But I've lived in the Orient, and I like it. And there are good things that have come out of it. I'm a big fan of Tai Chi. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of yoga. I'm a big fan of Indian and various Chinese cuisines. But that's about the end of the list. All the good things in the world that grace us today, whether it be science or technology or free markets or individualism or free thought, all the things that really make life worth living have come out of the West, starting with ancient Greece in the 6th century BC. But it's all being washed away now. People hate it. They actively want to destroy it. So I guess that's part of my answer to the question, Kerry.
Well, interesting you say about the Orient. I had a friend, she's Korean, came from an upper-class Korean family. She hated being called Asian. She much preferred being referred to as an Oriental, if you will, because an Asian, you could be an Eastern Asian or a Western Asian. So Westerns like Indians from India and other countries, and there's a kind of elitist feeling, and then they get grouped in with all the other Asian countries, and they don't like it. They don't want to be called Asians.
That's exactly right. But there's so many words that are misused and conflated with other words today. It's horrible because it's been pointed out, if you can't express yourself in words, it's like in Orwell's 1984, yeah, where one of the objectives of the state was to have less words every year, because if there are less words, it makes it harder to express your thoughts. And indeed, it makes it harder to think. It's hard to think if you don't express a thought. And we've talked about the dumbing down people, and I think it's true.
It's a in my opinion here, Doug, it is a conscious, overt conspiracy to make people dumber. And because they're better workers, they do what they're told, and you don't have to worry about them, because critical thought is really at the heart of Western civilization, of why it evolved and why it triumphed and why the individual triumphed. Because look, founding fathers of the U.S. were critical thinkers. All of the great men that we point to throughout history were able to think critically and separate themselves from the conventional wisdom, from the status quo, and envision something far greater and far outside of the mainstream. And yet, society works to try to eliminate that ability or that innate capability in man.
Yep, you're absolutely correct. And it's actually getting worse. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is that the so-called quote-unquote intellectual class, they gravitate towards certain industries. They gravitate towards higher education. They gravitate towards the media. And these two places put out memes. They put out thoughts that everybody hears them, and they automatically accept them, because these people are supposed to be educated. They're supposed to be thought leaders. And because of the lack of critical thinking in the world, people don't question these statements and ask for proof and analyze them. It's getting much worse, because even though these horrible type people have always gravitated towards higher education, now everybody, all kids, are supposed to go to college. And it's a travesty. I'm completely opposed to it. If I had good counsel when I was a senior in high school, I would not have gone to college. And I went to college in a time when relatively few people did, and when it was relatively more valuable, much more valuable than it is today. But today, people are indebting themselves for life to be inculcated with all kinds of really stupid and wrong and destructive ideas. So it's getting worse for that reason.
Hey, can you imagine safe spaces in the time of Socrates or Plato? You'd be laughed out of the place. The last thing they cared about was hurting somebody's feelings. It's like, you need to make a point, make it logically, defend your argument. And if your feelings are hurt in the process, too bad. And what you say about college, there's a great novel out by John Grisham. It's not really great because he's, in my opinion, he's a so-so writer. He's probably got a room full of people, like many writers do, pumping out his latest idea. It's formulaic and all that, but it takes on for-profit law schools. And the concept is, if you want to go to law school and you can't get high enough on the LSATs, there's a for-profit law school that will take you in, even though your chances of graduating are less than 50%, and your chances of ever passing the bar are probably about half. And then your chances of ever getting a decent paying job that'll pay off the $200,000 worth of debt you've accumulated is even lower. And yet, because of crony capitalism, because of the distorted markets, they get federal funding just like all the other so-called institutions of higher learning.
You're absolutely right. And there should be zero federal funding or state funding of any type for not only graduate schools or law schools or universities or any kind of education. It should be purely a market function. That would make it cheap, would make it competitive, but that's not the world we live in. And it's surprising. What do we have, 1 million lawyers in this country today? And everybody wants to be a lawyer. And no, nothing personal, because I know that you're a lawyer by background.
Recovering.
Yeah, recovering lawyer. Is that they don't produce anything but words. And worse than that, they tend to go into legislatures where they produce laws. I'm of the opinion that there are only two laws that need to be observed. One, do all that you say you're going to do. And two, don't aggress against other people or their property. You don't need a library full of laws regulating every fact of existence. You only need those two laws. And then you can say ignorance of the law is no excuse, because these are two laws and they're very simple. So the whole society is actually becoming quite corrupt at this point.
Oh, completely corrupt. Well, one thing I will give the current occupant of the White House credit for, it's a couple of months ago, he actually made a speech defending Western civilization, making the same points that where would the world be now without Western civilization? You know, so many great things have happened. Look, the last thing the Arab world gave us was algebra, and even that is questionable, but let's assume they did. They haven't given us a whole heck of a lot since then. And you look at other places in the world where the individual takes second place to the state, which I guess is most of the world now, but those places are doing horribly.
Yes, and they're going to do worse in the future, because it takes a while for capital to wind down. So many people are on welfare, or they're doing make-work jobs for the government and so forth. It's destructive of basic character, not just destructive of the economy, where these people are consuming more than they produce. You're supposed to produce more than you consume. But so many people in the world are actually viewed as consumers. So they have. Yeah. So the economic effects are terrible, but the psychological and the philosophical effects of people becoming non-producers, parasites, consumers, are even worse. I mean, the Roman Empire fell, and this civilization can fall too.
Yeah, there's no immunization against a corrupt society meeting its natural end. I mean, this is what always has happened throughout history, and to think that we are somehow different. But you know what you say, like the concept of being a consumer, like that's somehow a good thing. And when they look to stimulate the economy, they're always looking to stimulate consumption, not production. Whatever happened to the concept of being a productive member of society, Doug, whatever that means? I think it means something totally different now.
It's totally perverse, and people accept this without even thinking about it. Even the tax system, for instance, the tax system basically taxes production. Of course, I don't, as an anarcho-capitalist, I don't believe that the state has a right to exist. I say that because the state is pure coercion. Like Mao Tse-tung said, the power of the state comes out of the barrel of a gun. And that's not a proper way for civilized and free human beings to relate coercively. But the state likes to tax production more than it does anything else. And, you know, the more you tax something, the less of it you tend to get.
Yeah. Well, the power to tax is the power to destroy, as Judge Learned Hand said. And our politicians have certainly mastered the art of destruction. It's not even creative destruction. It's just destruction of capital, destruction of opportunity, and destruction of the ability of the individual to excel, to really realize your potential, which is what Western civilization, at least the Western civilization that I studied, was really all about, Doug.
That's right. And, you know, people say, well, the election of Trump is a good thing. And I have to agree. So many things I don't like about Trump, but the biggest thing I really like about him is that he defeated Hillary Clinton. Because I'm in Argentina right now, and we've just gotten over in this country about 10 years of an absolute nightmare, where the criminally insane Cristina Kirchner was running this country. And she was the wife of the ex-president called Néstor Kirchner, who was a prize himself. But at least he was kind of he was a kleptocrat, but not an actively destructive kleptocrat. But his wife was a communist. And it's very funny how in the United States now, we like dynasties, where Bill Clinton was elected. So now you got to elect Hillary. And that first Bush was elected, the old Bush, and then they elected the baby Bush. And then the Republicans were going to put up, weak-kneed Bush, one that was the governor of Florida. So it's like Americans are becoming, they want a dynasty. They want a king. Where, you know, maybe whoever Obama's daughter is going to run, or Clinton's daughter is going to run
Chelsea
in the future, because they have name recognition. This is a horrible trend.
Yeah, totally horrible. The idea of a Hillary Clinton's daughter ascending to the throne. Hey, maybe we'll have Ivanka Trump or Donald or Eric. You know, what is it with this? We don't want dynasties. We want a meritocracy, I thought. I mean, that was what this country was founded upon, Doug, you know?
Well, but there's entirely too much power in the state anyway. It's one of the wonderful things about Switzerland is that nobody knows and nobody cares who the president of the Swiss Republic is. And he takes the tram to work every day, just like any other citizen, instead of being like a Roman Empire or emperor, where he's got a, you know, this gigantic entourage of hundreds of security people that go with him everywhere. I mean, this is the direction the country's increasingly going. It's not going away from that. It's going more towards that.
Yeah.
And they pass more laws every day. It's the U.S. is I don't call it America anymore, because America was a wonderful idea, but that's pretty dead and buried. Now we're just the U.S., one of many, many, about 200 nation states that cover the face of the globe like a skin disease at this point. So I'm sorry to sound so pessimistic, but the good news is that it's possible in today's world, especially with this new fool that Trump appointed as the chairman of the Federal Reserve. I'm sure it'll be approved. I'm very pleased with that appointment. Although people say, how can you be? This guy is like Yeltsin or Bernanke. He's gonna print up dollars by the truckloads. Yes, he will. And at this point, from my point of view as a speculator, that's a good thing. He'll create more bubbles. And bubbles are good for a speculator, although they're bad.
Yeah.
As a whole,
for the ordinary person. Yeah, well, I'm inclined to agree with you that there's only one outcome here, where we're headed. But on the other hand, you know, Western civilization survived for a long time here and excelled. And I think there were times where it kind of pulled back and was on the precipice. You know, we could see a renaissance. I mean, look, how old is Western civilization really? It kind of starts in the 1500s with the Renaissance and goes on to today. There really wasn't a Western civilization before that, or certainly not one worth trying to save or exalt, if you will.
Well, you've really got to go back to the Greeks, though. I mean, that's where people started thinking and so forth. And it's had its ups and downs since then. And we went through the Dark Ages. Mm-hmm. It's true, where, you know, the church was running the West as a theocracy. We recovered from that. So, yeah, maybe we're just going through a bad spate here at the moment.
I think it's a cleansing take place, right?
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, there are so many things that are happening that militate against this, like... In recent years, there have been hundreds of thousands of migrants that have flowed into Europe from the Middle East, but now mostly from Africa, is a big place. And this is very problematical in that this is actually more serious than the barbarian invasions that helped to collapse Rome in the 4th and 5th and 6th centuries, because these new migrants are totally alien and have no ideas of the culture that they're taking over. So in Europe, as bad as it is, I mean, it's constipated, it's socialistic, it's on the slippery slope from many different points of view. I think the weapon is you're going to get scores of millions of Africans from south of the Sahara that are basically going to invade it.
Yeah, that is an existential threat.
Oh, it is. I mean, Paris is going to look like Kinshasa, and London is going to look like Karachi. And those are not pleasant places.
Yeah, Karachi without the charm, right?
Right, exactly.
Bad thing. But on the other hand, we have Eastern Europe rising. I think will eclipse Western Europe, because they get it. They understand that this so-called migration, it's really an invasion, and it needs to be stopped, and they're acting to stop it. It's in their DNA. You know, Poland was just a buffer zone for the the mongrel hordes descending upon Europe. It wasn't a country for much of its existence. It was just there, a place where the invasion got stopped. And, you know, the Eastern Europeans, after going through communism, they're just so much more aware and understanding of the real world here, Doug. I mean, they really get it in ways that, you know, hey, you listen to these liberals, we need more Muslims. Why we need them, I don't know, but we need them. And they're just totally in favor. And, you know, they encourage this invasion that's taking place without any understanding of its effects.
You're absolutely right. This whole idea of Islamophobia, I'm not a Christian or a Jew, and I'm certainly not a Muslim. I'm not a religious person. But just recently, I read the Quran, believe it or not. I mean, I've always known a lot about it and selections and studied Islam. But I've never actually read the damned Quran. Oh, they call it the Holy Quran, but I actually read the book. And in my edition, it was 400 pages, and it was tough going because it's really a dumb book. But it says all kinds of horrible things.
The pedastry and
pathetical.
Conversion by the sword and abuse of women, subjugation of females, and yet that's the religion of peace, right?
Exactly, but it's a perfectly horrible book. And since it's the incontrovertible direct word of Allah himself,
amazing.
You can't argue with it. And if you're going to be a Muslim, you have to believe it. And it's really a bad thing if you believe in the values that we believe in the West, like freedom and individualism and free thought and so forth. These things are antithetical to Islam. I happen to know lots of Muslims, and as individuals, just like individuals of any color or ethnicity or religion, they're perfectly nice people. But then when you get to talking about what they believe and you scratch below the social veneer, it becomes very problematical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. I mean, we've seen this over and over again. And yeah, I'm not into religion myself at all, really a secularist when you get down to it, but because I just don't want to see these things of people forcing their religion upon others as the right one. There is no right religion, or we probably would have found it at this point. But yes, when you look at the Quran, there's a lot of objectionable stuff. And at the very least, anybody migrating should be asked to reject Sharia law and asked to reject all of those inhumane aspects of the religion rather than trying to convert everyone, right?
Well, that's quite correct. But you know, these people never bring up the hypocrisy of the fact that why is it that the U.S. and Europe are supposed to take all these poor, alien, downtrodden people that have values that are antithetical to our own, not just somewhat different, antithetical. When are the Chinese ever asked to take in immigrants? Are the Thais? Are the Japanese ever asked to?
No,
of course not. The Indians are never asked to. As a European, you try to become a citizen of an African country, forget about it. I mean, the amount of race hatred in Africa at this point is overwhelming. I spend a lot of time in Africa. I like the place. If I was 30, I would go to live in Africa because it's a great place to make money today. But so why is all the hatred and abuse being heaped upon Europe and America for not wanting to take these migrants when they can't go anywhere else in the world at all? It's out of the question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's something nobody's been able to explain. But hey, so Doug, you've done a lot in your life, and now you find yourself an author, a novelist. What brought that on? Was it just the being fed up with everything else and just saying, I'm going to teach a higher truth? Or how did you wind up here?
That's a good question, Kerry. And I've written a number of nonfiction books, and two were New York Times bestsellers. But I found that there are things that you can say in fiction that you really dare not say in nonfiction.
And higher truth, huh?
I would say so, actually. And there are people that read fiction that prefer fiction that don't read nonfiction. I can understand that. I read both. So that's what drew me to that. And what I'm trying to do in this series of novels is trace our hero, Charles Knight, as he pursues increasingly politically incorrect occupations. And I show that you can be a very good guy, a hero, while being these different things. And the first book is Speculator, where he's a speculator. And he does this in Africa, gets involved in a bush war and undoes a mining fraud and so forth, makes a lot of money, has a lot of it stolen by the government, goes off for 7 years around the world, kind of in a Christ-like manner. That's what they say Christ did. And he comes back and he gets into the drug business, both legal and illegal, both FDA regulated and DEA regulated. And it's very interesting because we talk about the effects of a lot of drugs, the techniques of selling them and producing them, and most importantly, the morality of drugs, which is I think something that's not explored adequately. And next year we ramp things up when Charles becomes an assassin. And we're going to talk about the techniques and the history, which needs a lot of revisionism, and also the morality of political assassination, something that you really dare not talk about in nonfiction terms today, Kerry. Yeah, so
very true. Totally true. Well, Doug, hey, it's always great speaking with you. What's the best website to find your work, your writing these days?
Well, go to High Ground Books. That's where the novels can be available, or they're on Amazon, of course, too.
Sure.
And kcresearch.com, I do a lot of free articles in addition to our paid publications. So any of those three, High Ground Books or kcresearch.com. And start with those novels, I think.
But all right. All right. Well, I'm reading the second one now. And hey, you're a great storyteller. That's what I've always loved about watching you speak in public. And in even in your nonfiction books, you're a storyteller. But in fiction, you really get to be to be the best storyteller, because you're not confined with trying to get the facts straight. You make your own facts, and it's a great thing. And hey, like I said, got a question for Doug or myself? Email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. Hey, Doug, it's always fun speaking with you. I always learn a lot, and keep up the great work. I can't wait for The Assassin to come out.
Thanks, Kerry. I look forward to talking to you again.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.